specified. Next case, Adams versus Adams. Mr. Maston.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
Dan Maston of the Indiana Bar. This is the first opportunity I've had to appear before the Seventh Circuit, having spent most of my years of practice before the Sixth. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm sure.
But don't tell
them. I was going to say, just don't rat me out on that.
The Internet will do that for all of us.
Yes.
As I said, I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Don Marie Adams. This case comes before your court today on appeal from the order of the United States Bankruptcy Court for the Southern District of Indiana and from the District Court of the Southern District of Indiana appealing the order of the Bankruptcy Court. That order disallowed the claim of my client, Don Marie Adams, in the Chapter 13 case of James Gregory Adams, who was the debtor in that case.
Did Greg Adams submit the same receipts and payment records that he submitted to the bankruptcy court to the Upton County, Georgia court when he moved to set aside the judgment?
I'm not entirely sure, Your Honor. The reason I'm not entirely sure is because the only thing I have of the Upton, there were three separate proceedings in Upton County. The last proceeding in Upson County, the one immediately preceding the bankruptcy filing, there is a transcript in the record, and that is the only thing that I have of that. I'm not entirely sure if he had the opportunity to submit those receipts. I know he attempted to submit those receipts, and he did attempt to submit those receipts in a Rule 60 proceeding, which was the proceeding prior to the proceeding immediately preceding the filing of the bankruptcy proceeding.
So, well,
there were actually
I'm
three.
Lost in the proceeding. Yeah. What reason did the state court give for rejecting his evidence of payment?
I guess I'm going to have to start go back a little bit. What actually happened? These parties were married, and they were actually business partners at the same time. And as many of these cases happen, there was a dissolution agreement, and then there was a modification of the dissolution agreement, and that modification provided what quote-unquote alimony, which was actually part of a property settlement agreement, and then the modification did a collateralization, and it basically provided a note that was signed by Mr. Adams and Mrs. Adams that provided a securitization of the quote-unquote alimony and some other obligations. It provided that Mrs. Adams was to have a security interest and some personal property, some other provisions. The Upson County note, or the Upson County suit, was brought on that note. Okay, it's kind of a global lawsuit. That was brought in 2007. That case was filed. Mr. Adams appeared, answered it, and abandoned it. He abandoned the defense kind of in the middle of it, very similar to the case of In Re Cat, which is cited in our brief. He allowed a judgment to go down. The case proceeded. A hearing was held. Judgment was entered against him. Now, that was really the start of his problem. Thereafter, they commenced a proceeding in Jasper County, just on the alimony provision, which is a subset of the larger provision, and took a judgment for a smaller amount because it was just a part of the larger obligation. That amount was paid, and that amount was applied to the larger balance of the Upson County judgment. Excuse me. But in Mr. Adams's mind, that was it. He had paid.
Well, do you concede that that he's paid her over $250,000 since the original divorce decree?
He paid a considerable amount of money, yes, Your Honor. Now, the problem is that some of that money was for, if you almost have to go back to the divorce decree and look at it, because there were provisions in there where Mrs. Adams was awarded. Mr. Adams is involved in what they call monster truck racing. And Mrs.
This
Adams
is the Annihilator?
Is that pardon?
This is the property in question is the Annihilator, is that
yes.
right?
Yes, I think the Annihilator, anyhow, he's involved in it again. It's got a different name. But they're very valuable and they're very popular. Mm-hmm. But anyhow, what happened is that she was given some equipment in the divorce, but Mr. Adams had possession of it because he was continuing to drive it. And at one point, he sold these items and had the money and was required to give the money to Mrs. Adams, which is $100,000. And he claimed that the $100,000 should have been credit against the alimony. So basically, he got a credit for $100,000 for alimony, which was her money.
See, so, if you look at the numbers alone, it certainly appears that he's paid the full amount owed and then some. Other than the Upson County judgment itself, is there any evidence that his figures are incorrect or that he did not, in fact, make the payments he claims to have made?
And Your Honor, again, I wasn't there when all this happened in Georgia.
Thank goodness.
Beg your pardon?
Thank goodness.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, my problem with this whole case is that, you know, this has all been litigated. They litigated this to death. Yeah, in Upson County, you know, he came back. He had an opportunity to have it reheard. You know, they heard it. It was, you know, he had all these arguments that he brought into bankruptcy.
Was there an appeal in Georgia?
No, Your Honor, he never took an appeal.
Was it an appealable order?
Yes, Your Honor.
He could have appealed, and he just didn't appeal.
Yes, Your Honor. The judgment in Upson County was taken against him. And then the Jasper
just,
County
if
order
I can
came
just,
in.
Excuse me. And that was that judgment before or after this $100,000 payment?
That was after.
Okay.
Oh, wait a minute. The Upson County order was after the $100,000 payment.
Yeah.
The $100,000 payment was
years ago.
Years ago.
Okay. And then did the Jasper and Upson County courts know about each other's judgments?
In the response to the Upson County complaint, the Jasper County case was referenced.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if there was any motion filed or if there was a jurisdictional argument made, but it was referenced.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you're presenting us with a complicated procedural tangle, but I thought your main point was simply this Upson County judgment is out there, hasn't been satisfied, and the bankruptcy court didn't have authority to set it aside.
That's exactly the point. That's where we are. And again, my problem with the case was, you know, and I've sat in probably dozens of claims litigation cases, and this is not just your garden variety claims litigation case. Ordinarily, you know, you've got a judgment and, you know, there have been payments made and there's a question of, you know, whether the balance is proper and whether the payments have been properly applied. That's not what we've got here. Sometimes there's a question of whether the claim is of a particular priority. There's sometimes a question of whether, you know, it's a domestic support obligation or whether it's dischargeable. None of those questions are up. The only question that Mr. Adams raised was whether the amount is owed. His entire argument was, I don't owe the debt because the judgment was incorrect. And basically what he asked the court to do was review the state court order. Now, when that happened, it struck me that jurisdictional questions were raised as to whether the bankruptcy court had the power to come in and rehear all this stuff, one, and two, if they did have that authority, whether there were preclusion issues under the full faith and credit clause.
Forget the jurisdiction issues. Right. It had jurisdiction. They have jurisdiction to review, for example, collusive state court judgments and the like. That's clear from Pepper. But claim and issue preclusion is your defense, is your argument.
Frankly, this case started as a motion for summary judgment, and I put in the jurisdictional argument because
skip
I was told that's what
that's not what it is. Just skip it. Okay.
Okay. I don't think really there's any dispute that the general rule is in Maurice versus American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons that there is no federal rule of preclusion, and that the federal courts are supposed to be bound by the rules of preclusion of the state in which the state court judgment is rendered. Pardon me. That decision uses terms like commands and directs. It's pretty mandatory. I don't think really there's any argument. I don't want to step on Mr. Adams' brief, but it doesn't seem that there's any real argument as to what the effect that the Georgia courts would give to this judgment. It appears that the rules of preclusion in Georgia would give both claims and issue preclusion to this particular judgment. There's some question whether the original Upson County judgment was actually litigated in the sense that it was not a full default, but a quasi-default, somewhat similar to the facts in the Catt case, in which there was an initial appearance, a defense filed, an answer filed, and then the attorney withdraws, and then the case proceeds without the participation of the defendant. However, unlike Catt, the Upson County Court later allowed Mr. Adams to file a Rule 60 motion and considered his arguments. He argued specifically, hey, I've already paid this. This lady is seeking a fraudulent double payment. They considered all those arguments, said no, that's not the case. They applied the Jasper payment, said this is what you owe. He again argued this in a contempt proceeding, and that was the source of the order that came before the court and was in the proof of claim. The only question is whether there's some kind of general equitable jurisdiction that allows the court to disregard this. And the only cases that have been cited are the Witte case and the Bulett case, and those seem to appear to turn on a question of whether there has been an extrinsic fraud on the court. And even in those cases, if the extrinsic fraud is something that has already been brought up, raised at the state court level, has been litigated, or has had the opportunity to be litigated, and has been fully resolved at the state court level, then issue preclusion, claims preclusion applies. It strikes me that this is kind of a preclusion case cubed. If Catt is issue preclusive, this is three times that, because he had two more bites at the apple, and that doesn't even include the case in Indiana when he came in and they registered the foreign decree, and he again had an opportunity to argue this, and he again lost, and he again failed to appeal. He never appealed any of these decisions. These are all appealable final orders. It seems to me that Mr. Adams is attempting to substitute the federal bankruptcy proceeding for the appeals court. And I think he should be precluded from doing that. Excuse me. Sorry.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mastin. Mr. Buchheit?
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Brad Buchan. I represent the appellee, James Gregory Adams. I think as Mr. Mastin made clear, the facts of this case are somewhat unusual in a claims proceeding. And to follow up on Judge Hamilton's question, I don't see anything in the record, Judge, that would indicate that the Jasper County Court knew that an action was pending in Upson County, or the Upson County Court knew a judgment or an action was pending.
If your client thought there was a conflict, wasn't it his obligation to bring that to their attention?
I believe that's true, Judge. But I don't know that there's anything in the record that would indicate that they did know about that.
What's the evidence that the April 2006 divorce modification agreement was procured under duress? And did you make that same claim in the Jasper County litigation for breach of the modified agreement and I think the back rent?
Yeah. Much like Mr. Mastin, Judge, I was not involved in the Georgia proceedings. I think we're both Indiana lawyers, not practicing in Georgia. The evidence on the duress issue came out at the March 2012 claims hearing in the bankruptcy court. And I believe the evidence was that either Greg or Dawn had sold the collateral subject to the security agreement under the modification. And then Dawn refused to release title to the third party buyers without Greg signing the modification agreement. That was the evidence that came out there. Did that answer your question?
So that's the duress.
Correct. That's what he cites as duress.
How is that duress?
Judge Rovner asked what.
And I'm asking, how is that duress?
That's a good question, Judge.
Okay, fair enough.
That's a good question.
And is it correct that no payment's been made toward the 2010 contempt order in Upson County?
I don't think any payments have been made since 2009, so yes, that is correct, Judge.
So that's correct. And beyond the claim that you've already paid in full, a claim that was rejected by that judge in Upson County, what special factors exist here that make Rooker-Feldman inapplicable?
Well, if I understood Judge Hamilton correctly,
well, either Rooker-Feldman or res judicata.
I think res judicata is probably the better question, and it's quite honestly, it's tougher for me to answer, Judge. Georgia issue preclusion is much like many states issue preclusion, just res judicata in general. We had the opportunity below to appeal it. We have identity of parties. It didn't happen. But what I think this court made clear on facts that aren't on all fours with ours in Witte, I think state court preclusion principles can, on the right facts, where recognizing or allowing a claim in bankruptcy would result in a windfall.
Yes, but that's just another way of saying there's no preclusion, right?
That's correct,
what
Judge.
It amounts to, that,
that's
that,
more or less.
No, yeah, but that would certainly complicate bankruptcy proceedings, not to be able to rely on judgments from other states that were appealable but hadn't been appealed.
I tend to agree to that as well, Your Honor, but I also understand the court doesn't necessarily embrace flaccid invocations of equity. But I think in this case, I think the equitable result in the bankruptcy court being a court of equity, I think it should be allowed to look behind the scenes here and look what happened.
We know bankruptcy courts can look behind the scene, for example. Pepper's a great example of that.
Right.
Okay, where the sole shareholder of the debtor arranged for a collusive judgment in order to gain priority over creditors.
Correct.
So collusive judgments we can look into. But Pepper and all the cases since then make exceptions or make very clear they're not trying to undo res judicata principles for bankruptcy proceedings for exactly the reasons Judge Posner suggested.
It obviously does muddy the waters very much in bankruptcy to somehow say that res judicata has no effect.
And
I would agree.
And for a bankruptcy judge to decide, in essence, how much it would have been fair for the husband to have paid for a 28-month marriage.
There is some language in the transcript from Judge Oddie to that effect, Judge.
Yeah.
Is there any evidence in the record that there was no opportunity to present your arguments to the court in Upson County?
No. Quite simply, no. At the time, I believe the 2009 judgment was entered against Mr. Adams, though. By this point, he was living in Indiana. I understand he was served with notice of the claims, but as Mr. Mastin pointed out, it essentially rendered a default judgment against him, and I agree with this court addressed the same or similar issues in Catt. But you're right, Judge.
Yeah. Isn't this a mess?
It is a mess. It's very much a mess, and it's unfortunate that without relying on the 28-month marriage, it's unfortunate.
But it's a mess. It's a mess that the Georgia courts sorted out, rightly or wrongly, right?
The Georgia courts did something, Judge. I don't know that I would agree that they sorted out rightly or wrongly. They sorted something out. I guess. Obviously, our position is they sorted out in the wrong way. Mm-hmm. But I would tend to agree that it might be the bankruptcy court might be the wrong court to bring that argument in. And what hasn't been addressed, and I think is important, and that obviously doesn't affect the court's decision on the legal issues, this is a 60-month plan that's been confirmed by the bankruptcy court. It's a $100-a-month plan. After attorney's fees for Mr. Adams' bankruptcy counsel, who, after this court has commenced, has since passed away, but after the $2,225 in fees to debtor's counsel, you've got about $3,700 remaining to fight over. So at Dawn's claim, I think, represents somewhere around 90% of the total claims. It's an unsecured, non-priority claim. So what we're really here on is 90% of $3,700 over 6 years. I mean, that's really what's at issue. And, again, I don't think it has any bearing on the court's legal decision.
It doesn't.
But those are facts.
Okay.
Unless the court has further questions, that's all I have.
Just one brief question. Characterizing what he owed her as alimony, that was kind of fraudulent, wasn't it? As far as domestic support, awards get a priority, and this was as I think Mr. Madsen said, this was a business.
Correct. That's correct, Judge. And you'll note that they subsequently gave up the DSO or alimony claim, leaving a general and secure claim. But I don't want to go so far as to say it's fraudulent, but I obviously wouldn't mind if the court found that. So.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Mr. Bokhide and Mr. Mastin, do you have anything further?
Yes, Your Honor. Just a couple of points. I can give you the citation to the record where the Jasper County alimony case was cited in the Upson County answer. That's record document 19, page 46. It's the eighth defense cited in Mr. Adams's answer. It's subparagraph 2. It's page ID number 141 in the record. And regarding Judge Posner's question about the alimony designation, yeah, I've done a lot of domestic cases, and they're always trying to characterize something in such a way as to make it non-dischargeable, and it always blows up on them. The fact that it was filed as a proof of claim as an alimony claim originally was my fault. This came in, I got the divorce decree, and I got the contempt order, and they came in by fax. I looked at them, and I thought they were the same case. And it took me almost 6 months to get all the paper to figure out that they were actually two separate lawsuits. And as you can see, it's a very voluminous file. And once we figured out what was going on, we got it all corrected. But, yeah, that's
okay, thank you, Mr. Madsen.
Thank you.
We thank you, Mr. Bookhead, and we thank you for your candor also.